Joining us now, Justice Moscata from the Acme Packing Company. Follow him on X at, I don't even know how to do this, J-U-M-O-S-Q. Is that how you do it, or do you have an easier way to say that?
I say Jumosk every once in a while, but yeah, I mean, that's the easy way to do it.
That's fine. All right, very good. I appreciate you coming on. You have been the leader in the clubhouse, unmatched, nobody's close, to killing Rich Bisaccia and the Packers special teams unit, killing the Packers organization for not doing special teams the right way. A couple of scathing pieces throughout the year that were very, very well written and well done. So when Rich Bisaccia gets let go yesterday, I tell my producer Charlie, I was like, get Moscata on. Hurry up. Get him on. I want him on. He's as tuned in as anybody we're going to find when it comes to talking about the Packers special teams unit. Before we get to Bisaccia, yesterday on the Wisconsin Sports Radio Network, so Inside Wisconsin Sports, Trevor Thomas and Josh Albright, 9 to noon with John Kuhn and Rami Makhlouf, Mason Crosby Show with Mitch Thunder Nellis, and then this show, and we're all talking about Bisaccia being let go. You want to know what the overwhelming response was? Everybody that wanted Bisaccia fired, overwhelming response was, well, it really wasn't his fault. Yeah, you can't put this all on Rich Bisaccia. Same people that wanted him fired now are like, nothing's going to change. It's going to be the same old Packers, regardless of who the special teams coach is at this point. So I ask you, how much blame do you lay at the feet of Rich Bisaccia for what we've watched the last 3 years, Justice?
Well, the interesting thing about special teams is it's really six different units, right? And it's important to parse those things out. So you could look at DVOA, and it'll tell you the Packers coverage units, the punt team, and the kickoff team. There was one team in the NFL that was better than the Packers this past year, and it was the Washington Commanders, okay? That's where Bisaccia made the biggest gains relative to what the Packers' history has been. If you look at the Packers' special teams history, we are not only 32nd among NFL teams over the last two-plus decades, we are basically twice as bad from average as the 31st team. So this is clearly a team that values draft and development, or even undrafted in development. If you look at a guy like Nasir Stackhouse, who played like seven snaps a game this year, they kept him on the 53-man roster and the 48-man roster to do that rather than bringing in more true special teams aces. I would make the case that the only full-time special teams ace that this team even had was whoever the fifth linebacker was on this team, whether it was Nick Diamond or Christian Welch, when Neiman
they brought Welch back because they had moved on from Welch,
right? And he was on the practice squad. He only came up when Neiman was injured, but that was really the only roster spot that cost them anything, right? Where it was, hey, okay, he's going to be on the 53. This guy's going to be on the 48-man roster, and we're not expecting anything out of him, offense or defense. He's just going to help us on special teams. That has definitely had an impact on the return game. Really, it's the punts that have been bad pretty consistently at Green Bay. Kickoff, we're all right. I don't think Savion is – I know people are like, we're giving credit to Goot for taking Savion in the third round, and he's a kick return specialist. Guys, he didn't return a kick in any of the last 4 years that he was at TCU. That was just a gadget guy that Matt wanted, and to justify him being a gadget guy on the offensive side of the ball, they had to play him somewhere on special teams. Someone has to absorb these snaps. You only get 48 guys – on a game day roster, and that number will not increase. So we've been bad in the return game. I think a lot of that has to do with more of the Packers infrastructure stuff. Field goal block, we don't care at all. I don't know how many times you guys have to watch the Packers basically play. They're basically playing field goal safe, and they're playing defense stay. So what that means for Packers fans is they're covering the fake. They basically covered the fake throughout the entire year, kept the defense on the field, but they would have the backups in on the defensive line. So even the guys who are actually going after the kick rush, or, it was Micah Parsons and, Rashawn Gary out there.
What about protecting the field goal kicker?
That was the next one that I was going to get into. Yep. So that's the interesting one, because they started the year not caring about it. Right, we would have the things like Brant Banks, who at the time was our either 12th or 13th offensive lineman in the pecking order, out there playing against the Dallas Cowboys because, one, we were dealing with injuries, but even with the injuries, Matt LaFleur still wanted Elgton Jenkins to get that breather. And so Elgton Jenkins got to watch Brant Bakes allow that blocked field goal that ended up leading to the tie against the Cowboys. Now, after that point, the Packers realized, like, hey, we have to play the starters on the offensive line for field goal protection. So after they had two blocked kicks in the first month or so in the season, they cared. Bisaccia was a good soldier. They kept asking him whose decision that was, and he would just keep saying, hey, it was an organizational decision, right? So I don't think he's going to come out of this and throw people under the bus.
Nope.
I do believe it's a structural issue in Green Bay. I can't imagine that Rich was being told in these meetings that they're having right now, which we can get into the timing of all this stuff, but in these meetings that they're having right now, that, hey, the Packers are going to invest in a bunch of special teams areas for the first time in two plus decades.
Okay.
And he says, hey, I'm going to walk away.
So let's talk about that for a second. Because Brian Gutekunst said in his press conference, hey, man, we weren't investing before, but when Rich Bisaccia got here, I started investing in the special teams unit. I was doing something that we weren't doing before. When Ted Thompson was here, Ted didn't care about special teams. He drafted guys that had to play on offense or defense, and then whoever ended up on special teams, so be it. But he wanted guys that could really play on one side of the ball or the other. Goody's claiming, hey, I changed the Packer way, and we did something different here for Rich Bisaccia. You're smiling right now on YouTube on X at me as I say that, because I don't think you're believing him.
Yeah, I do think the Packers' level of care went higher when they hired Rich Bisaccia. To hang a banner for that is patently ridiculous to me.
Yep.
Relative to the rest of the league, we're still, you know, it's peeing in the wind, right? So when you're looking at these guys and people...
Do not advise doing that, by the way, Charlie. Do not pee in the wind. That is not something we should do.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I tell my kid that all the time. All right, go ahead.
The core guys that people talk about, right? It would be like Zane Anderson. Zane Anderson's our fourth safety. He's ahead of Ketan Oladapo on the depth chart. We would have kept a fourth safety
regardless,
no matter what.
Right.
Yeah. So like that doesn't cost them anything. Nick Neiman, absolutely. That is the one move. Like I'll concede that. Like that is a move that helps them on special teams. The Packers also didn't pay full price for him. They picked him up on waivers at the cutdown deadline this past year. So if however you want to allocate credit in that direction, if we didn't have Neiman, it probably would have been Welch this entire season. And then the other guy is usually like Bo Melton. We carried four corners and he played wide receiver on offense for Matt this year,
even though he tried playing corner in training camp.
Yeah, but like we were never going to keep less than four corners, and he had already made this team before. So I'm not necessarily giving them credit for keeping Melton and keeping Zane Anderson when you would have kept a fourth corner and a fourth safety no matter what.
So let me ask you this. I'm with Justice Moscata, Acme Packing Company. Check them out as well. So when Ron Wolf was the general manager, if we go back farther, I mean, they go and you could talk about impact players, right? Reggie White, by far the big impact free agent signing. I'm not going to argue that. But if you look at Super Bowl MVP, the guy that changed games, it's Desmond Howard. Now, Ron Wolf did not go sign him some huge contract. Ron Wolf did not trade a bunch of draft picks to get him. It was another deal where he was released. There weren't a bunch of teams wanting to go get Desmond Howard at that point. And he went and scooped him up and decided, yeah, you'll play a little receiver, but this is mainly for special teams at this point. So Ron had that care for special teams, clearly. I don't understand where along the way between him and Ted Thompson, what got lost in translation there. And then now to Goody, who admitted to not caring about it when it started, and now saying he is starting to care a little bit more. If you were giving advice, Justice Moscata, to our guy, Brian Gutekunst, you're like, all right, Justice, what would you do? You're in my shoes. You're the GM. We got free agency coming up. We got the draft coming up. What do you want me to do?
I would say, hey, that fourth linebacker is really important. You have to figure out a way to keep that guy on the field. He's going to help you a lot of ways in the coverage game. So maintaining that, which I think is something that is on the table right now. If you look at so Gannon can run a 3-4 defense, right? The last time that we ran a 3-4 defense was under Joe Barry. We almost never carried that fifth linebacker on the team. So I think that's something that can go away. We can get worse on special teams in 2026.
That's great.
The other thing is, hey, Matt just wants these big receivers. There's not many big receivers who are good return men.
Very true.
Right? Yep. And that's a massive problem. When you look at what the average Packers receiver weight is in terms of just like snaps played, right, under LaFleur, it's hovering somewhere around like 207 pounds. Whew. There's one guy in college football who even returns punts at that size.
One.
There's one guy. One guy. So when you guys are wondering, like, why are we having this weird rotation at wide receiver and, you know, in the punt return game and all this stuff? And it's like, it's because none of them have punt backgrounds. Like, no, Matt wants these like 205 plus receivers to run block on the perimeter, but those guys are not the guys returning punts either. And if you look at wide receiver, or you look at just positionally the guys who return punts, it's smaller wide receivers who are usually around the average returners, like 180 pounds. We don't have guys like that on
like 5'9", 5'10", 180 pounds, yeah, somewhere in that area. You're right.
Yeah. Yep. Backs who are that size, undersized backs. All our running backs are 220 right now because we want to live in the inside run game, right? Or defensive backs that size. And the Packers, I mean, really for two decades, like they don't really want to go under like 195 at the
– So is this as much in an issue with LaFleur then in your mind as it is with Goody then?
I think it hasn't helped. I think the receiver part of it has not helped in the punt return game specifically. So, yes, that part, yes.
And you can get a punt returner in the sixth round that can come in and do better than probably what you have out there right now.
Oh,
you
wouldn't. The Iowa guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Guys, the names are out there. It's not a mystery who's going to be a relatively solid returner, or like Ole Miss has the guy, Xavier Harris, who's blocked like 10 kicks. He's a defensive tackle, right? I bet we don't take those.
He's
guys,
gigantic.
We're not going to value it.
Yes.
He's massive. He's massive. Like 6'8".
Love him. Took him last night in my mock draft, Justice. I took him last night, my mock draft for the Packers. I absolutely love that kid. But I mean, that's really what it is. So in your mind, go to the next part. Does it even matter who this next guy is? Because yesterday we were talking about special teams coordinators and who might be out there. And you wrote a piece and you put together all of these guys that are out there. I looked at it and puked in my mouth and said, oh my God, I don't like any of this of what's out there, right? But then I came up with, what if you just won the college round? Because it was suggested to me by a listener yesterday on the show. Like, why don't you just go find one of the better special teams coordinators in college football, somebody that knows who's really good on special teams, has played against these guys, can help you with the draft process of that dude would be amazing on our special teams unit, that guy would be a perfect returner, we can get him here in the sixth, whatever, and go get somebody new and fresh versus the retreads like Fossil that are out there and trying to do it all over again when more than likely it's not going to make a hill of beans difference.
Well, Fossil was retained in Tennessee by Saleh and got the AHC bump too. Like, it's really been picked over. So there's been 11 vacancies that have opened up this NFL cycle, and all of them have been filled other than Green Bay's. I know there's a certain level of feeling right now from Packers fans that are like, well, we could take our time and all this stuff, and we're not really doing anything right now. We're so far removed from practices. We can take our time and really evaluate this. Folks, that's not how it works. The combine is a tampering, a tampering event, and that starts in less than a week. Like, the Raiders just hired their head coach. They couldn't sign him until after the Super Bowl. Not yep. only have they hired one, they had to pay a bunch of money to poach a college guy, Deke Millis, who was really an NFL guy. He had 20 years of coordinator experience at the NFL level. He just worked for Shane Beamer, whose father, Frank Beamer, was like the guru. Special teams guy
guru
in college football for yep. decades.
Virginia Tech.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep. So the Raiders had to pay up the money because the options weren't good when the Raiders were hiring a special teams coordinator. And they've just hired their number two, too. Teams are fully finalizing their rosters right now as far as coaching staffs. And those are coaching staffs that completely turned over, started anew. It is not a good time to be in the market. If you are the type of person who thinks like, oh, Matt just grew the balls to fire Rich Bisaccia.
No chance. No way.
And like, it's a terrible, it doesn't make sense.
But this
and
is
we're talking about
this is the thing
we're
for me,
we're
Justice.
Talking about, this I want to say something.
Go ahead.
This is The narrative coming out of the Gannon hire was he didn't want to wait because the market was moving too quickly. And now you want me to believe that we're waiting a month after that decision to quote unquote fire Rich and make him say that he's stepping down.
No,
I don't believe that. I think it's a lot more likely Rich is was in these meetings for 2026, didn't like what he heard, and was like, I don't want to deal with this anymore.
But this is the thing. The timing of this is stupid. A, like we said, it took forever. Okay, fine. But B, his right-hand guy for all these years, 2 days prior or whatever it was, says, I'm going to go be the special teams coordinator in Cleveland. And Rich is like, oh, I love Green Bay. It's so great, blah, blah, blah. If that was the case, wouldn't you tell your guy, hey, man, like, I'm getting old. I think I'm just going to step away, take some time off. You could have this. If you want this, this can be yours. Be this. You know they talked. There's no way that guy took that Cleveland job without talking to Rich about the pros and the cons of potentially going to the Browns organization, getting the coordinator position, what to ask for, all this other stuff. They talked. So either A, he didn't tell his assistant that he was going to leave, which maybe he didn't, but I don't believe it. Or B, they both were like, this is going in the wrong direction and we're both getting out of this because this is not heading the right way. That's what I think. Now, the question becomes, what tripped him? What triggered it, right?
Yep.
Was it, I think we're going to move on from McManus and have another kicking competition, which Passaccio is probably like, I'm not going through this again. I'm too old for this crap. If we're going through young guys again, I'm not living through that. Or a couple of the cuts. Maybe Josh Jacobs, his Raider guy, might be one of the guys that they move on to save $8 million in cap room. And he's like, what are we doing? Right? Maybe that's part of it. And again, I'm spitballing. I got no inside information. I'm just saying something clearly triggered him to pick up and walk away.
Yeah, I think it probably stemmed from those 2026 interviews, or, you know, maybe something popped up with his family. I mean, I'm leaving the door open for something like that, right?
We had Whelan on the other day. Was it yesterday? Yeah. Whelan's on this tour in Ireland and in the UK. And I said, hey, man, it was just convenient time. And we had the setup prior, and I just got lucky. Passaccio got fired or he quit the day before. I said, hey, man, have you talked to Rich? And he's like, yeah, we were talking last night. My first thought was it was health. I was like, hey, man, is it health? Is he okay? Mm-hmm. Is he good? He's like, yeah, it was just a personal decision, that's all, and I support him, and so forth. So, I mean, if it was family-related, maybe, but it doesn't sound like it.
Yeah, and the timing of it, again, to loop back to that, is really interesting, especially considering the fact that Bill Huber of Sports Illustrated is now reporting that we're looking at Kyle Wilbur as special teams, you know, to interview for special teams coordinator. He was the number three in Green Bay, not this past season, but the two seasons prior. Would be really shocking if Matt was out of the Rich Passaccio business, and then after Passaccio steps down, the number two is promoted outside of the building, that he is now interviewing his former number three, right? It's hard for me to believe that. I mean, maybe there is a path to that being the real story, but I would need more information before I buy that. I think Rich stepped down on his own
volition. Yep, I agree with you. And if you push him out this late, shame on you, because that is really dumb.
I don't think Matt saw this coming, because when Matt's taking, you know, trips to Madison, you guys would know better than me, right? That's probably 3 hours round trip.
Yeah.
And you think you're going to have a special teams coordinator vacancy literally the week of the combine?
No way.
I can't imagine that he's making that happen if he knew that this was coming.
Totally agree. Hey, one last thing on the way out here. You have a great piece up on Quay Walker today he heads into free agency. Tell everyone about that.
Yeah, so I've been trying to basically make like a consensus free agent board this offseason, because I don't think anyone's board doesn't have some wonky hot take ranking. Yep. And I want to know what the market actually looks like. You know, if you look at the entire internet, we got 17 of them up that have been like aggregated now. And by far, Quay Walker is the most volatile in these rankings.
ESPN way up, Pro Football Focus way down.
Yeah, he is anywhere between the 9th and 139th ranked free agent, depending on who you look at.
Oh my God.
There are only a couple of guys who like their rankings are half as volatile as his. I think where it stands right now on Quay, Pete Doherty had the article late in the season where he asked, Quay, what his relationship with the team is in terms of the contract. And Quay was basically like, we haven't talked in a while. I would assume that he's going somewhere else.
Yep.
I know this from the people that I talked to within the league. The agents of linebackers are hoping that the market is basically $15 million per year for a minimum starter, which sounds crazy, but that is what Jermaine Sherwood got last year before, right before free agency. He got that deal with the Jets. He was like top five in the NFL in yards allowed through the air. Got that $15 million per after not starting his first 3 years in the NFL and then being a 1 year just like okay starter. That sounds nuts, $15 million per year. The average slot defenders right now are getting 13.
This is the thing.
That is a part-time.
They're going to have to pay Adrian Cooper. I'm not paying both of them big money. Not right now. He's not, in my opinion, we can disagree. I don't think he's Adrian Cooper. So if I got to pick one of these two where I'm going to put a lot of money, I'm putting a lot of money on Adrian Cooper.
Perfectly reasonable way to do it, right? Especially when you have, you know, the Kraft extension, Christian Watson extension, probably Devontae Wyatt extension this year, maybe even an LVN extension. I don't think that they're going to extend either Reed or Wicks, but maybe they go down that route. I mean, there's mouths to feed. Moving forward, if you want to move off of Quay, move off of Quay. The big question is just, do teams think that he's going to be a multi-year starter, right? Because that's going to be huge for him. Because if he can hit that $15 million per year floor, it's a good chunk of change. I'd like $15 million per year.
Absolutely. No doubt. We all would. Justin Moscata joining us here. Acme Packing Company. Check him out. Great, great website. Does a lot of great work as well. Follow him on Twitter. JUMOSQ. JUMOSQ. Justin, thanks for coming on, man. That was really good.
Yes, sir. Go Pack Go.